Okay, so we're going to start here in Jeremiah 20. Come on in. So I got to listen to class. Thank you all for participating. Thank you, Dixon, for leading that class on Sunday. What I'll plan to do tonight is pick up here in Jeremiah chapter 20, and then I'm going to leave Psalm 131 for Dixon to do next time I'm gone. So we'll just do we'll just look at Psalm 18 fairly briefly. My goal would be to try to finish up these parts of it tonight, see if we can get into a little bit more of the non-Jeremiah Psalm material. Okay, so let's look at Jeremiah 20. Can someone read the whole chapter, please, nice and loud, of course?
I got it. When Asher, the priest, the son of Hemer, who was chief officer in the house of the Lord, heard Jeremiah prophesying these things, Asher had Jeremiah the prophet beaten and put him in the stocks that were at the upper Benjamin gate, which was by the house of the Lord. On the next day, when Asher released Jeremiah from the stocks, Jeremiah said to him, Asher, is not the name of the Lord has called you, but rather Magor Nisabim. For thus says the Lord, behold, I am going to make you a terror to yourself and to all your friends. And while your eyes look on, they will fall by the sword of their enemies. For I will give over all Judah to the hand of the king of Babylon, and he will carry them away as exiles to Babylon and will slay them with the sword. I will also give over all the wealth of this city, all its produce and all its costly things, even all the treasures of the kings of Judah. I will give over to the hand of their enemies, and they will plunder them, take them away and bring them to Babylon. And you, Pasher, and all who live in your house will go into captivity, and you will enter into Babylon, and there you will die, and there you will be buried, and all your friends to whom you have falsely prophesied. O Lord, you have deceived me, and I was deceived. You have overcome me and prevailed. I have become a laughingstock all day long. Everyone mocks me. For each time I speak, I cry aloud. I proclaim violence and destruction, because for me the word of the Lord has resulted in reproach and derision all day long. But if I say I will not remember him or speak any more in his name, then in my heart it becomes like a burning fire shut up in my bones, and I am weary of holding it in, and I cannot endure it. For I have heard the whispering of many, error on every side, denounce him. Yes, let us denounce him. All my trusted friends, which watching for my fall, say, perhaps he will be deceived so that we may prevail against him and take our revenge on him. But the Lord is with me like a dread champion. Therefore my persecutors will stumble and not prevail. They will be utterly ashamed because they have failed, with an everlasting disgrace that will not be forgotten. Yet, O Lord of hosts, you who test the righteous, who see the mind and the heart, let me see your vengeance on them, for to you I have set forth my cause. Sing to the Lord, praise the Lord, for he has delivered the soul of the needy one from the hand of the evildoers. Cursed be the day when I was born. Let the day not be blessed when my mother bore me. Cursed be the man who brought the news to my father, saying, a baby boy has been born to you, and made him very happy. But let that man be like the cities, which the Lord overthrew without relenting, and let him hear an outcry in the morning and a shout of alarm at noon, because he did not kill me before birth, so that my mother would have been my grave and her womb ever pregnant. Why did I ever come forth from the womb to look on trouble and sorrow, so that my days have been spent in shame?
So, what stands out to you about Jeremiah and, Dixon's description on Sunday was not just Jeremiah the weeping prophet, but Jeremiah the emotional prophet. What stands out to you about the kind of insight into Jeremiah's emotions and discouragements here from this passage?
It wasn't worth being born.
So, Jeremiah hates his life so much, he just doesn't wish he, it's not just that he doesn't wish he was born, he denounces a strong curse on the guy who announced his birth and brought that good news. Cursed be the day that I was born, and cursed be the guy who brought that good news. So is Jeremiah feeling that because of how wicked he is?
No.
Why is he feeling that?
Because the persecution is going through.
Because the persecution is going through because he is
righteous,
obeying God, you know, all those things that he's feeling because of his faithful service to God. So that's notable, right? Okay, what else?
He didn't want to speak, but he felt like he had to. Mm-hmm. It just burned inside of him, the word. And it should be that way in us.
Yeah. That's a great passage. You know, if I say I'm not going to mention anymore, I can't do it. I got to keep preaching. I weary holding it in. I can't hold it back. Great.
All my trusted friends, how he feels about his friends who are watching for his fall. I mean, that's the social part of it.
So let's talk about the social part here. Well, I know he's physically persecuted here. He's beaten and put in the stocks. But as you've been looking at Jeremiah, and as you look at Jeremiah 20, do you get the sense, and this is an honest question, you don't have to agree with me, do you get the sense that it's the physical persecution that's the hardest, or is it something else that's the hardest?
Laughing stock. I think it's the persecution. I mean,
humiliation.
The humiliation, persecution, being mocked. Other words, you know, that we could say, my shame, my toil, my sorrow. That's how the chapter ends. Why did I come from the womb to see toil and sorrow, spend my days in shame? That's your
impression. Derided.
What's that?
Derided.
Derided.
Is in there.
Verse 7, laughing stock. Everyone mocks me, right? And so my suggestion here is that what we'll find in the Psalms and in Jeremiah here and in Elijah later, and not as much with Job. Job's just more complicated. We get more. His situation is even worse than Jeremiah's. But you just get this impression that it's the social part that is the overwhelming, like, I can't take this anymore. You think about how much of a context pain has, right? Someone tying you up against your will and hurting you is literally, I call it torture, right? You willingly sitting in a dentist chair and someone hurting you, you actually pay money for them to do that. And you walk away, you go, oh, that was so painful. Then you move on with your life, right? It's a very different context, even when there's pain. And, you know, people don't curse the day of their birth because they break their ankle, right? They do it because of this longstanding discouragement and feeling alone, feeling isolated, feeling friendless in this darkness. It's not just because of pain. It's this fuller picture. And so this is my thought here. We see here with Jeremiah, with the Psalms, and with Elijah, it's really the social piece that becomes so painful, so hard and unbearable. That's Moses and his discouragement with how burdensome it is to help the Israelites. So you don't get the sense that the beating that's the worst part of the suffering. It's all these other things on top of that. Yeah, Dixon.
One more verse. I don't think you mentioned this one, but 10. All his friends are whispering behind his back. I mean, what it appears behind his back.
Yep.
And that was really hurtful, as it is for us. When you think your best friends are talking about you behind your back and this, they're waiting for his demise or for his fall at that time. And it seems to me that would be really a painful thing.
Yes, absolutely. We sing that hymn, take my hand, let me stand where no one stands alone. And the second verse is, there's no feeling that's worse in this whole wide world that's worse than being alone. I think we have that sense. That doesn't mean that's universal, you know, for every single person. But I think it's that loneliness, the shame, the feeling like even his friends are against him, all that really becomes overwhelming him. It's the shame, it's being a social outcast, his close friends are against him, toil and sorrow and shame in this. And one other thing that that I'll bring it up, but I'd like for you to see it first of all. Notice anything, say you're on verses 13 into 14. Notice anything about his emotions that is noteworthy comparing those two verses?
13, he says, sing to the Lord and praise the Lord. Verse 14,
if you were to pull out verse 13 and put on a poster on the wall of your kitchen or on a pillow, it sounds very positive, right? Sing to the Lord, praise the Lord. He delivered the life of the needy from the hand of evil. Positive, this is good. Oh, Jeremiah, you're finally in a good mood. And then the next verse, cursed be the day on which I was born. I actually haven't seen that on any pillows in people's homes. Is cursed be the day I was born. And we'll cross-stitch that for the newlywed couple. So what does that show you about human emotions, the human experience, that you just see here in verses 13 and 14?
It's bipolar.
It's bipolar.
They change.
So it doesn't spell it out for us. Is he working hard to be optimistic in 13, and then he just falls? It's too hard to keep that. Is it really like, man, this is amazing? And then, you know, emotions are a roller coaster. You know, we have a sense of up and down with them. I think it's helpful to see that, you know, what goes up must come down, you know, and just a secular example, but, you know, before I understood a little bit more about human emotions, you look at a crazy manic character like Robin Williams, right, who's just improv, very intelligent, and like on his high, and you're like, oh, he was depressed, oh, he took his life, right? Well, yeah, because you can't stay up there. I wouldn't want to see him in the dressing room after the show. You know what I mean? What goes up, he's going to have to come down. And so, you know, Jeremiah here, you just see these liquid emotions going up and down. So praising God, then cursing the day of his birth. Now that language is straight out of, you know, very similar to Job 3 there, right? Go ahead.
On that verse, the one that stands out to me in 13 is where he has delivered the soul of the poor from the hand of the evildoer. So he's praising God, you've done this.
Saved his life, yeah.
But you go back to 7, he's, oh Lord, you have deceived me. I was deceived. You're strong and have prevailed, but yet I'm not delivered yet. I know he's going through all this, but the main complaint seems to be at God. Like, where's my deliverance?
Well, because who's brought all this on him?
I'm praising you, you deliver these people, but yeah, you know, I'm in this, not for my...
Yeah, I mean, who's put him in this? Jeremiah didn't say, yeah, hey, I would like to be an outcast for the rest of my life, right? God put him in this. God is using him. If this were the book of Job would say, look, that's the way the world is. And of course God did it. If it wasn't God who did it, who is the one who did it? You know? So God has put him into the situation. Yeah, Jason.
Yeah, I think 13 really goes with 11 and 12, right? I mean, he talks about being talked about behind his back. I think it goes much more with 11 and 12 than it does 14.
Yeah, that's the contrast.
Right, the 11 and 12, he's talking about God delivering him from those who... And then he's talking about looking for his vengeance, and I'd like to see it and see what happens, and I know that you can, right? But to your point, how I really feel, though, is the dreaded sorrow. But yes, I know that it's there.
Yes. Yeah, and he's thankful to God. God's going to preserve his life. God says, I'll bring you through. God does bring him through. He survives the captivity. That's one of the most interesting twists in the whole book, is when Babylon takes over and kills everyone and drags everyone out. The Babylonians are really nice and good to Jeremiah. And they're like, you want to come with us? You want to stay here? Whatever's fine. You know, they honor him. So, you know, Jeremiah's brought through, but it's just been miserable, and he knows it's going to be miserable. And the last thing we see of Jeremiah in the book is they're still miserable, you know, kind of thing. So just some lessons from Jeremiah's complaints. It looks like Jeremiah's painful relationships, the social side, the scorn, the betrayal, the isolation, is what gets him down the most. Shame, scorn, reproach, betrayal, rejection, loneliness, right, all of that. And I suspect that we can relate to this, that it's the relationship side of things that make life so difficult. Your job, your house, your church. That if your relationships are good and strong, and you have something terrible to go through, you're buoyed through that, right? You're encouraged through that and supported through that. If it's the opposite and, you know, people hate you, you're feeling isolated, you kind of give anything to get out of that, you know? And so just being more aware of that, of how it's the people and sin and discouragement. I think we'll see that with Elijah. It's this, you're still not listening. I can't, after all I've done, and they're still trying to kill me. That's like his breaking point, right? It's not another week at the river waiting for bread. It's the disappointment, the rejection, and all of that. So obviously pain can bring us down. I think it's people who really make everything else miserable and unendurable. So I think that just becomes a lesson for us to be wise and analyze, how are my relationships? If a church situation is discouraging, just how impactful that can be on people, things like that. Dixon.
That's exactly what I was going to say. The relationships, if you think about that and you apply it in our practical life, whether, you know, if it's a church in a situation and we're in, we don't have strong bonds and strong relationships with other people, then if we, you know, begin to seclude ourselves or whatever the circumstances, we're in disagreement or whatever, that relationship is really, if that's really broken, we're going to be miserable. We're not ever going to feel fulfilled in that. The same thing is in the case if you've got a secular job. If you don't have the relationships there within the people, then you're going to be miserable in that. It's not a good situation. Same things in the marriage,
yes.
And same thing with your children or, you know, or parents or whatever like that. But any relationship that's not good, we're going to tend to, you know, lean to come out of that if we can. That's our tendency.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes we can't do that, you know, and shouldn't do that, but that's our tendency.
And the point is not make your work friends your best friends. I think the more common issue would be that work people are so discouraging. If they're so sinful and just hard to be around, that just brings you down. You know, if you weren't that close with them, but it was a fine work environment, that'd be much more endurable, you know. But if it's a really dark, negative environment and their sinfulness is just, that becomes so hard to take with that. Marriage, the closest relationship, right? You see that in the Bible. Clearly, right? We're supposed to become one. The two become one. You can explain that on a neurological level of the oxytocin, the bonding hormone that is released in the marriage couple. Okay, so if they're discouraging, that's going to be discouraging. It's going to be very hard to bear. So we can talk more about that, but we can just see now the potential. Oh, yeah, like these things are really impactful for our lives. Yeah, Jason.
We talked a lot about the relationship and talking about the relationship with God and how you don't have that maybe necessarily physical touching part of the relationship with God, but certainly working towards that spiritual and that relationship with Him. I think we have to recognize that God gave us these other relationships like the marriage, and it's up to us to be very wise and how we choose that relationship so that it ends up being something that can be very encouraging, because the spouse relationship could be really bad.
Yes.
If we choose poorly and it becomes something where it's very discouraging to us, that's not helpful.
Yep, absolutely.
And I think any of us who are married, who've been through a difficult time, who have a strong spouse, we would say, I don't know how I would have made it through it without my spouse.
Yep.
Had to have her. And
yep.
And I believe that's God working in my life.
Yes.
And helping me to get through that time with her.
Absolutely, yes. That would be God's plan for that, for to really be a blessing to each other. Gardner Hall, who preaches in New Jersey, New York, likes to say, he'll say this when he marries people and he does the ceremony, that he doesn't know what I'm going to say, that marriage can be the closest thing in this heaven to, oh, I said it wrong, the closest thing in this life to heaven, or it can be the closest thing in this life to hell. You know, and that's the potential in that relationship. So that doesn't sound so romantic in the marriage ceremony, but he's trying to, have you heard him say that? Yeah, you're like, yeah, okay, he said that. So I think that's noteworthy. Jeremiah leans on God and is faithful through his tests. That doesn't make everything easy. One of the big points from this class is God helps us. God will help us to be faithful. That doesn't mean that everything's going to be easy in our life. We may not even grow in our mental health stability as much as we would like. If I had another 10 years to grow, another 20 years to grow in this life, but God can bring me through. He can strengthen me and bring me where he wants me to be. And of course, in the world to come, he will make all things new, and he will bring that full healing. Proverbs 18:14. A man's spirit will endure sickness, but a crushed spirit who can bear? I think this is making the point that I've been trying to bring out in Jeremiah. A man's spirit will endure sickness, or a broken leg, or a lost job, whatever. But a crushed spirit who can bear? What is this telling us about human nature? Remember, we still are in the category of our class of how God made us. So what is this teaching us about human nature here? Is our biggest challenge just the physical pain, right? Is that the biggest difficulty? The emotional, and I think very connected to the social side. Don't underestimate just how bad our emotions can make things, right? We don't want to underestimate that for ourselves or for others. So we bear sickness, we bear broken bones, financial challenges. You've got a positive attitude and optimism. You lose your job, you're like, well, this is awful, but hey, it'll be fine, right? And some of those people who their whole life, they make tons of money, they lose tons of money. They're like, well, I lost a million, but you know what? Next year I'll make two. You know, I mean, that's fine because your spirit about that, right? You may pass all those things with flying colors. But when our spirit is really down, that's what becomes unbearable. This should be very comforting. You say, well, what's comforting about that? What's comforting is that God put that in the Proverbs, right? God told us, I get it. I know how hard it is. God put in the Proverbs, who can bear that crushed spirit? God knows that our emotions and when we feel down, that those things are the hardest things to go through in life, right? So that should be comforting, that the God who made us is aware of these kind of things. Yeah, Eric.
I was thinking about also when he pleaded that Jesus would take away the thorn in his flesh, you know, the response was, my grace is sufficient for you. Like, you can handle physical pain.
Yeah.
As long as you have my grace.
Yes. Great thought. Very good. Yeah. Yeah, Betsy?
It's interesting when we look at people in this life. Sometimes when we have a crushed spirit or someone has a crushed spirit, they will try to do the physical things to pull them up out of that. And it doesn't work a lot of times. Money, jobs.
Yeah, drugs, shopping.
Well, right. And it does not work.
When we are, it's so sad. The days of the internet where, you can learn about anything. Oh, that celebrity. Oh, that actor. Oh, who wrote that song? And you're there on Wikipedia, their spouses, right? Married this long to this person. It's these people that in their life are just going through these different marriages. That's not making them happy. You know, it just doesn't last for long.
It's interesting though, because when we think about that relationship one with another, we know that humans are fallible and we're going to let each other down. And as we talked about in our previous class, the relationship that we should be leaning on and trying to build the most is with God, who will never let us down.
Right? Yes.
So basically, he's giving us the answer, no matter what happens in this life, I'm always there. I'll never let you down, and that is our answer to overcome everything.
Yep, that's the journey we're on, and as we'll see, we've seen it, we'll see it again. We grow in that. That doesn't mean that path is easy, but that is going to bring so much blessing to our life, and that's the path we need to be on. You know, so we'll make the comment. Someone made the comment on Sunday in the recording, Psalm 22. A faithful David, a faithful Jesus says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Pain will make us feel separated from God. That's just almost natural. It doesn't mean you don't have faith, because he's still crying out to God. He hasn't given up on God. But don't be alarmed. You know, God, where are you? Oh, yeah, that's what all these Proverbs said. Again, I felt the same thing they did. So we stick with God. We go through it. He brings us through.
He's faithful, you know. So those things are just going to be natural parts of our journey in this life with God. Okay, let me just make this comment, this observation fairly quickly. Do not spend too much time on Psalm 18. But what stands out, the question on the worksheet was, what stands out to you from a biopsychosocial spiritual perspective? That is, thinking, emotions, the body, relationships. And let me just pull out some verses here. Psalm 18, verse 1. I love you, O Lord, my strength. For by you I can run against a troop. By my God I can leap over a wall. The God who equipped me with strength and made my way blameless. Verse 34, he trains my hand for war so that my arms can bend a bow of bronze. You give me the shield of your salvation. Your right hand supported me. Your gentleness made me great. Verse 39, you equip me with strength for battle. So the big picture that I'm trying to, like, want, the key idea I'm trying to pull out of Psalm 18 is this. How does David in the psalm characterize God's strength in his life, his blessing in his life? Is in his body over and over and over again. You give me strength for battle. You train my hands for war. My arms can bend a bow of bronze. Your right hand supported me. By you, I can run against a troop. I can leap against a leap over a wall. You're my strength. You give me strength. Made my way blameless. And so we just need to see God is going to give us strength. We may not know how. But in this whole model here of the spiritual side of things includes the body, is that God's going to be able to give us strength. And we may not know how, or is that through thinking? Yes, obviously that's going to be a part of it, right? Thinking more biblically, motivated more biblically, renewed in the spirit of my mind. Obviously that's huge, right? That's huge. Don't be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Yes, is it by thinking? Yes, is it by relationships? Yes, is it God's love poured into my heart? Romans 5, yes. But the takeaway, the point is this, that David says, I feel you giving me strength, like I can run against a troop, leap over a wall, you train my hands for war. So just one more example, I think, of how all this is so integrated, of God giving us strength, and David just feels that very bodily. We're not going to go to Psalm 131, because I don't want to rush through that. I want to move on. But when you guys talk about that with Dixon in a few weeks, there's such a body picture there of the comfort God gives us. So that's my basic point there. Any thoughts that you wanted to bring out on Psalm 18? So let's just make a couple observations from a few more Proverbs. Proverbs 14:13, how God made us. Even in laughter, the heart may ache, and the end of joy may be grief. What does this teach us about how God made us? What does this teach us about human nature?
Highs and lows.
Highs and lows, right? Laughter, aching heart, joy, grief. Good. What else? Yeah, Amy.
Well, and God gave us emotions. We shouldn't be afraid of our emotions, and that it's okay to feel sad. It's okay to hurt. It's okay to be happy. You know, it's okay to have that whole spectrum of emotions.
Yep.
We shouldn't discount that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's common for us to maybe want to just suppress those things and bury those things. That's not what the psalmists do. The psalmists bring it to God. So I was talking to a friend of mine at the Bible study, this was yesterday. I woke up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania this morning. It's been a long day. But at the Bible study yesterday, talking to a friend of mine, and I think he's struggling, and we're hopefully going to be able to talk soon. And if by God's grace I can have some encouraging conversations, that would be great. But he said, like, I know it's not good to really just be overly aware of your emotions. And I said, no, it's really more you don't want to, like, feed those things, but you don't want to feel those emotions. Like, you do want to feel those things and be like the psalmist and all that. And it could be one reason he's just feeling discouraged is if he kind of been told, well, don't pay attention to your emotions. Well, you're going to just get pretty depressed about that because that's just a buildup of hardship with that. But what else here? Even in laughter, the heart may ache. Are emotions kind of complicated?
Very.
Yeah. Someone's laughing. Is that the full picture of where they're at?
Well, some people are like laughing because they're trying to cover up something else.
Yeah.
And some people are really good at that.
Yeah, absolutely. So covering it up, so even in heartache, you might laugh. You may be joyful now, but it'll end in grief. Our family story that I just think is funny because it's just human nature. When my dad's dad passed, you know, they all rushed there to Florida and they're all there before the funeral, family seeing each other and, you know, mourning and just the ups and downs of those kind of seeing each other and crying and tears. And then, you know, it didn't stay there. And then, you know, someone will say things and it's funny again for a little bit. And the next person will come in and it's sad. Anyways, so a friend from church shows up to my grandma's house. And, you know, my family's sitting around, everyone's just laughing. Like, what's wrong with you people? You know? Well, that was just because they caught him at that 5-minute break in between all the sorrow. And it's going to go back to sorrow. Lots of tears, obviously. But you catch someone at the wrong time in that, you're like, well, why is everyone laughing? I thought you guys were, it just lost a loved one. Even in laughter, the heart may ache. The end of joy may be grief. So emotions are complicated. We might be feeling multiple things at once. Just because someone's laughing doesn't mean they're doing well. They may really be hurting on the inside. Joy may not last. It may quickly transition into sorrow, right? Okay. And the other proverb, Proverbs 15:15, all the days of the afflicted are evil, but the cheerful of heart has a continual feast. What does that sound like? What's the other proverb we just looked at that sounds kind of similar to? Okay. Yes. It absolutely does. You know, and I wasn't thinking about the second line, but that's exactly it. A cheerful heart is a continual feast, and then a happy heart makes good medicine. The first line, all the days of the afflicted are evil, to me that sounds like a crushed spirit who can bear, right? A crushed spirit who can bear. So life is miserable when we're feeling afflicted, especially when we're afflicted in our hearts. The afflictions of the heart are one of the great burdens of life. Probably thinking maybe different Bible characters. You know, Naomi coming back after losing her husband and two sons. You know, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. My life is bitter, right? This kind of afflicted, painful life. The power of negative feelings versus positive emotions. So when it's negative, it's awful. All the days of the afflicted are evil, but cheerful of heart has a continual feast. That's very powerful in the other direction. And so as much as we can, let's pursue being cheerful of heart. You can't just magically turn that on, and you may need to process some things with God first and grow out of that. But God does want to pull us out of an afflicted life. He does want to heal us. He wants to meet us in our sadness, take us by the hand, and then lead us out of it. So in this class, we're not telling you just to abandon the sad things in your life, but realize God does want to meet you in your sadness and then wants to help you out of that. That's the idea. Okay, any other thoughts on these proverbs here? Yes, here.
You use the word process, and that's important to not be overlooked because many people don't process when they're afflicted and when they're going through suffering. And they're missing a big, huge part of the healing process.
Yep.
They don't process the emotions that they're experiencing.
Yeah, and I think that's just a particularly Western problem. Mm-hmm. I think, and I don't mean that every Eastern culture does this great, but when you see the way that people from Eastern cultures, their funerals are just wailing, and the wailing you see described in the Old Testament and the New Testament, that they're not shying away from those emotions. They feel them, right? And you know, the picture I always think of is, you know, Saddam Hussein is taken down in Iraq, and the people flooding the streets in joy and smacking his statue with their shoe, like this, just like very emotional. We just don't do that here, right? So that I think is helpful. I think that Western cultures have shied away from that to their detriment. And so feeling those things, bringing them to God, is this biblical model. Yeah, Jason.
Yeah, these proverbs also remind me of perspective as well, right? So a lot of times, and when you deal with our like teenage boys, talking to them about a situation or a circumstance, you might try to help divert them away. Okay, but let's look at some of the positive things in the situation. And I think a lot of times when we're dealing with difficulties, you know, we sing the song, Count Your Many Blessings. I think that's so very true. We've got to not ignore the stressful things, but also don't get overburdened with them and lose sight of the fact that there are many blessings.
Yes.
And we see so many examples of that in the Bible where characters are going through difficult times, but they recognize the blessings and they're able to lean on that and
yes.
get encouragement from that.
That's right. And it may even kind of change hour by hour what we need. Habakkuk is in despair, but he ends that book in praise, right? And Jeremiah speaks a little too much to God, I think it's 12, and God rebukes him for that. Just he crosses a line there. So there is time for weeping with those who weep, and there's times for trying to help people do the next thing. You know, there's a variety. You know, there's not one magic bullet. So sometimes that's just meeting people where they're at, trying our best in love to, you know, help them. People aren't going to be perfect, but we can at least be wise and sensitive to, okay, what is this, what this person needs? Yeah.
You kind of alluded to this thought that was in my head, and then Jason just added to it. But sometimes we refer to, you know, being a half cup half full personality or a cup half empty personality. Mm-hmm. And I think that fits into, you know, your last bullet point there and what Jason was saying. You know, any thoughts in regards to either what perspective we should, what we should think about that in regards to being a Christian or God's people and how that will help us in dealing with particularly some of our downs in time? Any thoughts?
I think that is a good question. One thought is, I think just our programming, whether that's you're born with it or raised into it or whatever it is, just makes some people more naturally optimistic.
And we're taught that. We're taught to
taught
think that way.
Yeah, or if you picked it up just genetically. Either way, some people are just naturally more optimistic. Some people are more naturally pessimistic. I think we...
5 minute warning.
I think that this would encourage us. We're not going to do ourselves a favor in being negative when we don't need to. Obviously, we need to be realistic, right? And the older I get, the more pessimistic, I think in a realistic way, I am about life, right? Politicians aren't going to solve all our problems. People are going to have problems. Like, it's realistic, which when it comes to humans, then is going to be a little pessimistic. But should we have a greater than hope and joy and optimism about God's in control, everything's going to be okay. Like, the story of the universe is God wins and good wins. Like, so growing in optimism. So we sure don't do ourselves a favor by being negative when we don't need to. I think we do need to be realistic. But you don't get a pessimism in the Paul's last words in 2 Timothy, right? You don't get this pessimism in Peter's last words in 2 Peter, you know. So I think wisdom would be realistic, and Ecclesiastes tells us the realistic understanding of the world is going to be all vanity. But growing in a deeper sense in our hope in the Lord, love for people, should be more than countering that. Does that seem the right response? Tom?
I've been considering all this, and tonight we've not mentioned attitude very much, but attitude is kind of the interweaving of spiritual, physical, you know, it's kind of like a summation.
Thinking, for sure.
In that, right. And we all know that a person's recovery time from an injury or a sickness or an illness or even from an emotional standpoint is greatly affected by their attitude. You know,
yep.
They can be, you know, knock three weeks off of healing because yep. they had a great attitude. You know?
Mary Hart is good medicine.
And yep. the same thing by adding if they have a very pessimistic attitude.
Yep. So you're right. And attitude is one of those words, like,
oh, I want to look up all the verses that have the word attitude in it and go, that word actually doesn't show up in the Bible. Well, but it's still there. It's still there. You know, so what is it that God says that really kind of connects to this thing that we call our attitude, our perspective, our outlook, you know, and certainly this abiding hope that says, to use Eric's example, I've got this thorn in the flesh that God's not going to take away from me. You know, I can rejoice in that. I'm going to thank God for this. God's going to do good through this. God wins and everything's great. You know, it's hurting right now, but growing in this, rejoice when you have these grievous trials because this is what we need to get us to heaven. So a deeper optimism and hope is a part of maturing in the Lord, you know. So that's got to be a part of the equation. Yeah, Janet?
I think it puts more emphasis on the family of God because some of us are going to be optimistic at this time.
Yeah.
Some are going to be pessimistic. And I know in a congregation this big, we can't be aware of everybody's needs. But if we're aware of four or five people and at this time they're down, I can help them because right now my optimism is a lot higher than my negativism. I can help them get through that, which is what God's given us each other.
Absolutely.
And then someone's going to do that for me when it's my turn.
Yep, that's Romans 12, right? If you're gifted to serve, serve with joy. If you're gifted to preach God's word, I mean, kind of whatever it is, use those gifts that God gives us to be a blessing to others. You're gifted with optimism and hope right now, and encourage others with that, you know. Good. Jason, did you have a hand?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, the glass half full side, I often go back to the book of Job, right? No matter how bad I think it was, it wasn't that bad. And I can pull myself out of a situation that's very helpful to me, right, in perspective. Right? Because a lot of times it's about perspective. Our mental, emotional state can bury us, and we're not seeing perspective. And our spouses can help us with that, too.
Yep.
Let's look at this in perspective.
Yep. Good. I think we're talking about some good principles that work together. There's no one magic bullet, but these things all together, I think, move people in the right direction. It can be extremely helpful. Okay. If I'm forgetting things, maybe we'll have to tuck them in later, but the goal then for Sunday is to start our next section, which is talking about the pit, how it is we struggle, falling into the pit, principles of the pit. And so that's kind of where we're going next is, okay, this is how God made us. Okay, what happens when the wheels fall off the wagon? And talk about some different things. This will be a point where we can talk about, okay, we've been using the term mental health. What do we mean by mental health? What do we not mean by mental health? What is blah, 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 you know, kind of all those things. So, okay, I know that second bell's about to ring. Any other thoughts before we...
Any assignment?
No.
Not really?
I just drove up from New York, so... I'm glad I can put two words together.